I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What's going on? I'm talking right now with John Robert Connors. Would you like me to just call you John?
You can call me whatever you'd like. John or, you know, JR.
Okay.
Most people call me JR, but, you know.
Nice. Well, I'm a huge wrestling fan, so JR always refers to Jim Ross, the iconic play-by-play guy. But I'll call you JR.
All right, cool.
For this one. So he's in a band called Cave In. As you can see by all the amazing artwork behind him, I actually have one of the t-shirts with the flower kind of thing behind you. That graphic, I got it on your guys' tour and you played Seattle. But Cave In, they have a new album, their seventh album on Relapse Records. So I'm talking with, so not only do you play the drums for Cave In, you also play keyboards and guitar?
Not so much the guitar. I can kind of.
That's what your Wikipedia said. That's what I'm just.
Maybe in the past I borrowed stuff, but on this new record, it's mostly just drums and synth atmospheric type stuff. So
I should have watched one of those Wikipedia fact or fiction videos and known the truth. Those are always fun to watch. So your vocalist, your main dude, Steven, he was very busy during the pandemic with a lot of collaborations, like the 2 minutes to late night stuff. Did you get into any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, awesome. It was good fun. I mean, that kind of helped us kind of maintain sanity through the whole beginning of the pandemic, you know?
Yeah.
I did a couple covers with them, and then we did the Cave In Every Time I Die one, which is a year later from the start of that whole project.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good fun.
So I watched the Terror and Hot Water Music one, and then you guys did the Every Time I Die and Cave In split. It's like if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, it's this thing put on by 2 minutes to late night, awesome folks over there. And they do this thing called Splitsville, where you cover a song or a couple songs by Every Time I Die, and they cover some Cave In songs. How much time did you guys have to prepare for that?
For that particular song, we had a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably about a month and a half, something like that. So we did, we were able to sit in the space and kind of go through and learn the song a couple times before we tried to, do a good take. But it took us a couple tries and then we just recorded it at the space and then had those guys, mix and master it and all that. So
was it kind of a trip to hear their version of one of your songs?
Yeah. I mean, we like their version better than what we did.
Oh, no.
It's kind of, especially the video that they did, it was so heartfelt and, they dug up old footage and, from what I understand the band, Every Time I Die, shot the footage anyways in the basement of, the house that they originally created the band in,
That's so cool. So
that whole thing on their end of things was very touching,
Well, you don't have to say it, so I'll say it, with bands like Cave In, like you guys laid the groundwork for bands like Every Time I Die. So it's, you know, it's cool that they, you know, paid homage to that and dug up some old video. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super cool. I mean, the best part of that whole thing was that neither one of us knew what the other band was going to do as far as the song choice.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a good surprise on both ends. And then when it like kind of, you know, 2 minutes did the airing of both videos back to back, it was kind of like a pay-per-view, like everyone got excited.
Yeah.
And because there was no shows at the time, it felt really like you were going to a show. So it was really nice.
Yeah. So with shows coming back, just the other night, I went and saw this band called Borknagar, Rotting Christ, kind of a black metal show. Have you been out to a bunch of shows, or are you kind of just taking it easy and getting ready for the record?
No, I've been to a couple. Caven's played a couple shows.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did like a show in LA. We did a couple of shows here in Boston. And then we did actually a festival in, I want to say Atlanta, with Every Time I Die, but, and Converge, and it was a big fest there. So we did do a couple of shows. It was very unnerving to start with. But you know, nowadays, especially in Boston, there's, you know, they've been pretty good about, you know, checking for vaccines, making people wear masks and, you know, be the, you know, do all the safety type stuff. Yeah. So, and the last show that I went to was actually Ministry in Boston.
Mm.
And that was a great show. But yeah, nowadays it kind of feels like you can kind of be mindful of it and be safe at the same time, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. So you drop the word Boston a few times. Obviously you guys are, you know, like a famed Boston band. So, you know, I have to do this question and I want to center it around Boston because, you know, that's where you've grown up. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
We grew up a little bit north of here, but for, a lot of the, you know, upcoming, I don't know how to say it, but the upbringing of Caven was in the center of Boston during that time.
So for you personally, this doesn't have to be, you know, some like, you know, of all time, you know, like listicle thing. But for you personally, what are your four? So we're talking the Mount Rushmore of Boston music. It can be metal, hardcore, funk, punk, rap, just your favorite Boston artists of all time. And let's do four.
Man, that's Rushmore. A crazy question. It's like asking your favorite band type question. You know? I mean, you know, the ones that pop off in my head right away or like Scissor Fight, you know, I mean, they would probably consider themselves more of a New Hampshire band. But you know, very much, in the scene, if you will, in Boston, when I was living there anyways, in town. So that would be number one. I mean, you know, underground bands, I'd have to give it up for Barbaro. It's a band that, Andrew Schneider was in. He's someone who's recorded Caven in the past many times and, you know, good friend. But that band was great. Not a whole lot of recognition for that band. Unfortunately, they're not around anymore. You know, there's bands like I could call out Aerosmith, you know, like kind of dudes, you know. And for a fourth one, I mean, you know, I guess Converge, maybe.
There you go.
You know, we grew up with those guys.
And yeah.
They've certainly been, you know, kind of, you know, contemporary, you know, bands, musicians, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've just come up in the scene with them for years. So, yeah, I guess those four. But I mean, there's plenty of others that I'm probably not even thinking about, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's that. There you go, man. For me personally, no one's asking for it, but I'm just going to say Caven, Converge, Blood for Blood. And let me just throw in American Nightmare.
Yeah, there's them too.
Or something. I don't know. Anyways, that's just four off the top of my head.
That's the great thing about Boston, especially, you know, I don't know so much about these days because I live outside of Boston now and I don't get out too much. But
sure.
When I lived there and I was going to a ton of shows, I mean, there's so many great Boston bands that were coming around and like in the hardcore scene, metal scene, like just standard rock and roll. I mean, there were so many. Elder is a great band that was kind of up and coming. They're still around, I believe.
Elder, yep. Unearth has really killed it, and they got you know, they
like went out, we could go all day, you know,
totally, just totally.
Band names, they'll keep popping up, you know.
Nice. All right, well, that's funny because we actually have it booked for a 12-hour interview, so you know, let's go, dude. I got the Metal Archives popped up now. I hope you're not doing anything today. Okay, so you mentioned Converge. It's funny because obviously here's the segue. Nate is in the band, obviously full time now. This is, I believe, the first album that he has been in the writing cycle for, you know, and contributed to. What was that like working with Nate, you know, a longtime friend and stuff, and now as a part of the band?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you touched upon it just then. I mean, he's been a long-term friend. I mean, we've known him since, you know, Caven was a thing pretty much, and we were going out on the road. I mean, we played shows with, you know, Channel, which is one of his old bands, and, you know, and then he joined Converge. I mean, so he's been around Caven and, you know, all the shows and stuff that we played for, you know, since the band has been around.
Yeah.
So he had kind of a... he had kind of a unique perspective on being a member of Caven, because he's had that time watching us from the outside perspective. So, you know, he was able to come in with that mindset as well as, you know, contributing creatively to the writing process. So it was really cool to have him join in. Felt very comfortable and felt very natural. And especially for me and him, I mean, you know, we were in Doom Riders together for a while. So, you know, we had already had somewhat of a, you know, working chemistry, if you will, you know. I mean, in that band, he's more of a guitarist and, you know, he's obviously the bass player in Caven now, but I mean, he just, you know, we have a good understanding of how we work creatively together. So, you know, that aspect of things, it was very easy to kind of, you know, jump on in and start writing. And I mean, he has a slightly different perspective of how we view music, you know. I mean, the three of us, Steve, Adam, and I, you know, grew up, you know, suburban Methuen area, listening to, like, you know, what we were brought up on musically was, like, you know, the grunge era of music, you know,
sure.
And like before that, classic rock, you know. And I think he had already kind of went into the punk rock hardcore realm, you know, a few years earlier than we did before we discovered that stuff. So he had a little bit of a more mature understanding of that world, you know? And he brought that into the writing process this time around because he was able to kind of quality control what we were doing.
Sure.
You know? Cause we kind of almost reverted back to our teenage selves and, you know, we may have written the next grunge record, you know, from 94 that was missed, you know, but he was able to kind of QC that. And, sorry, I don't know if I could swear.
Oh, it's all good.
But yeah, he was a good thing to have around, you know? So, it was very, very nice to have him in the writing process.
I mean, it's nice to have an outside sort of perspective. I mean, obviously inside now, but you know, being that he had been so familiar with Caven, he probably had things he loved about Caven and things that he would have changed about Caven. So, you know, him coming in and being like, this is the Caven album I always wanted, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's totally what it was, you know, and it was a good thing too. I mean, you know, he loves all kinds of music too, you know? So there was a lot of references that we were all able to kind of find common ground on, you know? We just tried to bring all that out as much as we could, you know.
Awesome, man. Well, the record is called Heavy Pendulum. It's coming out on the 30th on May 30th on Relapse Records. And you know, I gotta ask, so you know, this is probably a tough thing to ask, but what stands out to you the most about the album? You know, what can you tell us about the record? What stands out about it to you?
I mean, it's kind of, it's definitely a mixed bag of emotions. You know, having lost one of our close friends who was a member of the band, Caleb, definitely put things in perspective before we started writing for the record. And it kind of, you know, in the process of doing all the, you know, all the benefit shows that we did for his family, and then we played some shows to kind of support you know, Final Transmission, which was, you know, what we released before, just prior. You know, in doing that, we found that it was very cathartic to continue to play music. And not only that, but to play music that Caleb had a handwriting in. So, you know, taking that into consideration, you know, stepping into the rehearsal space and writing a new record, you know, that was always kind of in the back of our head, back of our minds. And, you know, there's riffs and lyrics on there and from Caleb directly from notebooks that he had left behind. And, you know, a lot of that stuff, the rhythms and the feel of the songs are, you know, inherently have Caleb's touch on them, you know, because we spent so much time being a band together that we were essentially learning how to play music with him. Yeah. So that stuff is kind of, you know, kind of built into the band at this point. And then, you know, on the other hand too, I mean, Nate has worked with Caleb in the past as well in Old Man Gloom.
Yep.
And they were friends as well forever. So he had a really good understanding of that, you know, feeling as well. So, you know, going into the writing process was cool in that way. And then, you know, moving on from that, I mean, the record itself, we just tried to really, we had nothing else going on, you know, so there were no other side projects going on, no shows, you know, because we decided to write right when everything got shut down, which was actually a blessing in disguise for Caven, just because we had nothing else to do. So we could just, you know, hang out at the practice space and, you know, and just write. And with each song, we really tried to pull in all the influences and references from the past that we loved and just tried to shove it all into every song, you know, that we could. And I mean, you know, the record is long. It's 70 minutes worth of material, you know?
Yeah.
And there's actually more songs that we didn't end up putting on there because it was so long to begin with. So, I mean, it's a real testament to what we've been able to kind of put out there, you know, because who knows if and when we'll ever get the chance to do this sort of thing again, you know? So that's the biggest thing. I mean, we're just, we tried to, you know, put as much of ourselves into this record as possible and have it, you know, work in a studio, in a proper studio with Kurt, and get it well documented and, you know, just see where it takes us, really.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to the album. And, you know, I considered it like a treat. I didn't know if I would see you guys again, you know, after the passing of Caleb, rest in peace. And I have to ask, was there ever a chance that Caven was just going to be done and put it to rest? Or did you guys always want to keep it going?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a thought and a concern that popped up maybe individually in our heads when, you know, Caleb first passed. But I think, you know, right after that happened, we were pretty quick to kind of figure out how to help his family out, you know, like I said earlier. And so it was kind of like we kind of went from that moment to jumping into the benefit shows and kind of getting the material together for Final Transmission. You know, so we were just so busy trying to do that, that it kind of, we kind of fell back into playing music.
Yeah.
And at the point when we were done with all that stuff, it kind of, the question was already answered before it was asked, you know, especially because Nate, you know, from the beginning was on board with, you know, filling in bass duties. And at that point it felt, you know, so good to continue playing music as Caven and to kind of, we put in so much work and effort to get to that point, you know, out to get to the benefit shows and stuff like that, that it was like, you know, why not continue this process, you know? And, so, you know, we just kind of carried on from one thing into the next, and it was kind of a quick transition to the point where it wasn't really talked about whether we would continue or not. We just continued, you know? So, and, you know, I think there was a lot of thought about the, of naming that record Final Transmission. You know, we did have an idea that people would think of it as maybe the, you know, potentially the last Cave-In record. But that was really, you know, the name of that record was a remark on the opening track of that record, which was basically a voice memo of Caleb sending us what you hear, a little acoustic track with him humming along, just an idea of a future song. And that was the final transmission that we got from him, you know. Wow. That was the last thing that we heard of him. So that's where that came from, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the question, like I said, was answered before it was asked. So
yeah. Wow. Well, I think we're lucky to continue to have a band like Cave-In, you know, out there, and hopefully we'll be able to see you guys in the Northwest again sometime, you know. Do you guys have plans to do like a big headlining tour or anything like that in the future?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Awesome.
We just finished up, you know, doing videos for Heavy Pendulum.
Hell yeah.
For the record to come out. And in the meantime, we are, we're playing a show in a few weeks, a festival. Really wish I could think of it right now. But we are playing a show coming
nice.
Up.
Nice. Yeah.
We have some tours in the works that haven't been announced, and some of it hasn't been confirmed yet, which is why I can't really speak in detail on that. But yeah, so there is stuff planned that we will be headlining tours coming up.
I will tell you, man, coming out of the pandemic, I do not envy the bookers and promoters and stuff trying to, like, you know, there's probably got to be for venues, there's got to be like 6 or 7 holds on every day, you know, before things confirm. It's just like, it's got to be, it's like a madhouse getting rushing back to it. Tours are booked through like the next 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, van rentals and bus rentals.
Oh, yeah.
Here, and there's wait lists and stuff. It's insane at the moment because everyone can go out. So everyone wants to go out all of the time. And it's like, you know, there's too much demand.
Man, we got to have like a subscription service to clubs. Like, all right, you know, monthly subscription service. It's going to cost us a hefty amount of money, but it's all good, man. We had it a couple of years to save. So I'm a subscriber to Decibel Magazine, and it was cool to see you guys on the cover. Did you get yourself an issue of that to like, hey, mom?
Yeah, I got myself a copy.
Rock star.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's good to show my kids. Like,
there you go.
You know? But yeah, it's weird. It's surreal, you know? Cause growing up, I mean, that's all I had, you know, were the magazines, you know, for all my favorite metal bands, you know, and I would used to rip out the pages and like tack them up on my walls. And, you know, at one point my wallpaper was just pages out of magazines, you know, of all my favorite bands. So
me too.
It's really cool to be able to see myself on one of those magazines at this point, you know, but I'm not sure if people still do that, where they collect magazines and kind of hang up the pages as posters, you know? So.
Well, I just frame the picture so it makes it classy, quote unquote. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do behind
just put the whole magazine in a frame.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay. So who had the most coverage on your wall? What bands, you know, do you think were you a crew, Motley Crue, Metallica guy, or?
Yeah, Motley Crue was my first love, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
I had all the records, had actual posters, you know, Theater Pan and all that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, all the classics, you know, Motley Crue, Metallica was a huge one. You know, Guns N' Roses, Van Halen, like all those guys, you know, like I had Philip Anselmo up on the wall for a while, you know, like Pantera. You know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All of it was on my walls. I mean, I had a kind of decent sized room, you know, so there was a lot of stuff up there, but yeah, all the classics, you know.
What'd your parents think? Did they approve, or were they like, God damn it, this guy's into satanic stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they thought that too far of it. I mean, I think, you know, back in the day, my parents may have been Hellraisers themselves.
Oh, okay.
You know, but nice. they tried to hide it from me while I was growing up. But yeah, I mean, I think they gave in more than anything else. And they were just like, you know what? That's his little hole. Let him do what he wants, you know? But I think there was some struggle at first with that stuff. but you know, it's like the classic metalhead, you know, bedroom tale.
I remember the behind back of my door was just like all the like beautiful women of rock and wrestling. So like I just had all of these random like hot babes like on my back wall, just because like the rest of my wall was just like wrestlers and metal bands, you know, and punk bands. So like yeah. She one time she went in to go get my laundry and saw the back wall, and I came in the next day and my whole wall was just completely done. I was like, no, those are all my pictures of my girlfriends, dude.
Yeah. I had a couple of those, and not on the back of the door, but on the wall where the door would open and close.
Yeah.
Cover up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You found tricky ways, but you weren't actually being so tricky, you know?
No, exactly. Okay. So growing up, metal t-shirts and I'm wearing a Power Trip hoodie now. So I still, you know, rock the band shirts and band merch. What was your first band t-shirt that you can remember?
Probably Nirvana.
Nice. Okay.
Forget what the shit. It was like a blue and purple, but it was basically Nirvana, and it was a shirt on that song Stain, or yeah. I'm a Stain. I forget what it is now, but yeah, I think it was probably Nirvana. It was my first band shirt.
Dude, if you still had that original, you'd probably get like $600 off Etsy or Depop.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't have any of that stuff anymore. You know, I've moved around too much.
So what got you kind of, from that kind of stuff, you know, like Nirvana is a Seattle band, started in the underground, but I got to say they kind of became like a radio rock band, a big band. What got you into the underground? What got you, you know, deeper meshed into like the heavy underground Boston scene? Was it Converge?
Yeah, it would have been Converge. And mainly, I mean, Steve and Adam were ahead of me with that stuff, you know?
Okay.
And they were the ones who really turned me on to any of that underground stuff. I was always more of like a rock kid and
sure.
more, you know, classic rock and metal more than hardcore or punk rock, back in those days. But yeah, they definitely turned me on to like Converge. There was like Snapcase, Earthquake, were all those bands that, you know, we were listening to at that point. Yeah, it was those bands and really Steve and Adam that turned me on to all that.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm not going to take up all your time today, so I just have a couple more questions. Over the last couple years, there's been really difficult days for all of us, but music will, you know, can be like a therapy or a form of something to get our minds out of it. When you're having a crappy day, what's a good album that you can reach for?
Mm.
Something that I
go back to is either Super Unknown from Soundgarden or Siamese Dream, from Smashing Pumpkins. Those two records are very much my go-tos when I need like a good soul food type of day with music.
Yes. Awesome, man. Well, yeah. Shout out.
On top of that, if I were, you know, feeling heavier, you know, wanting a heavier day, probably like, you know, either Master of Puppets or Ride the Lightning, you know, those two records are definitely, they kind of get you fired up and, you know, get you out of the funk that you may be in. And I mean, those songs are like fuel, you know, they get you fired up and want you to tear down walls. So, you know, that would be my, like, I need to like really, you know, get amped up and I'm not feeling it, I put those records on.
Well, being
or Meshuggah. I mean, that's the thing. Like you start thinking of things, you know, left it, you know?
You're mentioning all these Seattle bands. I do a Seattle radio show, so I'm going to put you on the spot, man. Favorite Seattle bands. What's your favorite Seattle band or bands? Just,
I mean, all those.
I
can't say anything, you know, too deep here, but yeah, I mean, and now that you're saying it, I guess it sounds like I'm playing into you being in Seattle, but I'm really not, you know, I grew up and loved those records. And that was like, when I was like, you know, 14 years old, right around that time, you know, you're super impressionable. Mm-hmm. Those bands were
huge. That was the biggest stuff all over, you know, that was the,
yeah, couldn't escape it, especially as a teenager, you know? Yeah. And that really informed, you know, how I play, how I look about, you know, or listen to music and how I think about it all comes from those bands, you know, like the classic grunge bands, if you will, you know, but nowadays, you know, I have a hard time remembering where bands are coming from. But, you know, there was like bands like Botch. They were from Seattle, you know, and, you know, the various offshoots from that whole crew. You know, I think Helms of Lee is still in Seattle.
Yeah. So shout out Ben. Yeah.
But they're a great band, great people too. We had, you know, the pleasure of playing some shows with them on the West Coast, you know, before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And just, it was an absolute pleasure to be on the road with them, you know?
Absolutely.
So there's bands, and I'm sure there's plenty of others that I can't think of, but it's mainly because I have a terrible head for where people are coming from, you know?
Yep.
So if you told me one of my favorite bands was from Seattle, I probably wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, okay. I got to say it, man. Motley Crue would hate you, dude. You sold them out and went flannel, dude.
Yeah, totally. I guess I shouldn't talk, but yeah, seeing them live kind of changed my opinion on that band.
Sure. There's viral videos, yes.
There's plenty of evidence to that I just made.
One of these days they'll have an actual farewell tour. So
yeah, right.
Okay, man. So last question. If you can show us, feel free, but in any case, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got the scar.
Ooh, all right. Well, really, I have two scars that were one incident.
Okay.
One that I can really show you. I don't know if you could see it, but it's like right there on my wrist. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see that.
So it's that one, and I have a big one. Can you see it? Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And it's
not. What are we doing? Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
So that's all due to me trying to relive my youth in my mid-20s and get back on a skateboard. Which I was never a great skater to begin with, you know? We all got back at, you know, Caven all got back into skateboarding one summer when we were all living in Boston still.
We're young again, man.
Yeah, totally. Great idea. And we had like tours booked and everything, you know,
the last thing
doing as a not great skateboard person is get on a skateboard, you know, but long story short, ended up falling backwards and landing on my wrist. And so broke the wrist and convinced myself that it was just a sprain and then toured on it with Converge for a month. Caven and Converge went on tour for a month. And I did that whole tour, you know, really wrapped up wrist, but I had a broken wrist. So which made it worse. And then very long story short, ended up getting surgery in Germany to fix it, and a piece of my hip bone got taken out and fused into my wrist with screws and all that. So
because it probably healed wrong.
Yeah, it did, and that's why I had, you know, in the process of about 2 years, I had two casts on, and then they had to re-break it at one point, and then I went into 20-hour surgery to fix it. So, and then it was like another year of healing afterwards. So it was a scary time in my life. But thankfully I'm past that and I've been able to pick drumming back up,
which was
a worry, obviously. But yeah, so that was two scars for one event, you know.
That's hardcore. That's metal, man, is just being like, ah, it's all good. I'll keep going, man. No worry. Yeah.
I mean, you know, in hindsight, it was kind of the stupidest decision I've ever made, you know? But, you know, I always heard things like, I think it may have been like the bolt thrower drummer, like his shoulder up and like, was like, screw it. I'll just duct tape it together and keep playing, you know? Like, and I would hear stories like that everywhere, you know, once in a while. And I think those kind of popped up and convinced me that I could go on the road with a broken wrist, you know? So yeah, that tour, I don't remember a whole lot of it, just because there was a lot of cannabis involved as pain was involved. So yeah, I don't remember much of that tour, but from what I'm heard, you know, it was pretty good. So
you got the scars to prove it. When's the last time you skated?
That's the last time I skated. I think I was on tour in the States with Doom Riders, and we hit a spot that had like, we rolled up to some random hotel, somewhere in Texas. And, you know, across the street, there was a bowl there that someone had made, like a concrete, like it was well done.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nate's really, he's a great skater. So we just hung out and, you know, ended up drinking whiskey in this bowl, and he had a board, and I rolled around a little bit, but, you know, definitely had flashbacks to, you know, 2 to 3 years of being out of commission. So I was like, yeah, I'm all set. I'll just keep drinking a while, you know?
There you go. Dude, thank you so much for indulging my ridiculous questions and chatting with me today. JR from Cave In, new album again on Relapse Records. My bad. So again, you can get your pre-orders in. Believe it or not, I still buy CDs. So I got my pre-order for a CD. Keeping it 90s with the 90s theme. Look forward to the album, man. Any final words for us here in Seattle?
Not really. Just, you know, be safe, take care of each other, you know, don't be such pricks to each other, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going around and it doesn't need to, you know?
Right on, man. Dude, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Hopefully I'll see you in the future when you guys come around Seattle.
I'm sure. Yeah. That's in your future.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.